And welcome to a new episode of Pod Stallions. I'm Brian here in Canada, and my friend over in California is Jason. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening.
Although it isn't really evening there, is it? Like, we're taping on Halloween Day.
It's close. It's pretty close.
Yeah.
It's always nighttime in my heart. So.
Very nice. Yeah, it's very dark in my basement. So there's no sunlight here.
You just been in the basement playing that Sounds of the Haunted House record all day, basically?
Yeah, pretty much. And then, you know, switching it with Cats in the Cradle, as one does
as you
on
do.
A Saturday. Yeah. Our topic this Hallows Eve, I'm hoping I can get this episode out in time, is 70s made-for-TV horror movies. I don't think there's a more perfect time for these things. They definitely were apocryphal. There was lots of them, but also they were very impactful on our childhood. And I don't know if they were as prominent in the 60s or the 80s. I'm not really sure because I didn't grow up in those periods. But honestly, these scared the crap out of us as kids. And they were kind of like schoolyard legend because we didn't have video recorders, and you would hear about these movies. But to start off, I think we have to discuss something that happened today that was a big shock to Jason and myself, and that was the passing of Sean Connery.
Yes. I think from the multiple, you know, many times he's been brought up in conversations we've had, and anyone who knows me certainly knows how large Connery sort of looms in my life. Particularly Bond, obviously, but quite a few of his performances, you know, The Man Who Would Be King, The Lion in Winter, The Untouchables, The Offense, you know, he was always much better than people thought or expected. And for a guy that was made internationally famous by the James Bond role, he definitely tried to do other things. He tried to break out of the mold as best he could, but you know, he died at 90, so he had a great long life, and he retired I think the mid 2000s. He was officially
early 2000s. I think League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, filmed in 2002,
2003 or something, it came out. But yeah, so he had been retired for a while, and he's just one of those huge presences in my life, my whole life. And I mean, I know when I discovered who he was, when I understood that there was someone before Roger Moore. I remember having an album, it was a hand-me-down from my brother, and it was The Incredible World of 007, and it was a vinyl record that tied in with a television special that was done to promote Thunderball in 65. And I'd look at the back of the record, and I couldn't find Roger Moore. And so I would ask my brother who this was, and then the next ABC movie of the week that was Connery Bond is how I sort of discovered who he was. But we thought what we just want to acknowledge it. And for me, it's another cinematic icon hero that is gone. And I don't think you can overstate what he did with that role, and that people, you know, we talked about the Bond pictures and like all the spy stuff on another episode, but how the Bond ones in particular became a blueprint for modern action films. There wasn't anything like those before they got there. There was action, but there wasn't action the way those things were designed, and it sort of opened the door for everything. And he was the biggest part of it. And just an absolute legend, and a very interesting life. And he has been missed already for a while and will be sorely missed. And so it's a sad day. It's going to happen. As we always say, these things are going to happen more and more. And I'm dreading now the next big icons in my life and when those days are going to come, but they're going to come. And so we're going to raise a glass to Sean Connery tonight. And we'd like to do a full episode very soon covering his entire career. I think would be terrific.
Oh, yeah, that's totally appropriate. But, you know, it obviously won't happen on Halloween.
Right, unless it was just our Zardoz episode. Entire.
Oh, yeah, that's a horror in itself. And I think he'd agree. So
said that, let's talk about I think it was, it's great the way you opened the conversation. I like you said, I know there were made for TV things in the 60s and certainly afterwards, but I feel like whereas the mini series sort of came to life in the mid to late 70s and especially the 80s, that was really the mini series decade, I think.
The 80s, yeah, definitely. You're right.
The 70s, I think of as the TV movie decade, kind of. And I feel like the stuff that we're going to talk about, and you're going to throw titles at me, and I'm going to either see them or not, but I'll probably know them, are much darker than I think would be made for a made-for-TV movie today, a network-type movie. They went to really dark, strange places, and they were very disturbing. And, you know, don't you, I mean, like, one, I'll just throw this out and then you take it from here. But the one I always think of, it's not quite horror, but it's one of my earliest memories. And we've talked about it before. One of my earliest memories, and I didn't know it was a TV movie until many years later. And I talked to you about it, was Where Have All the People Gone?
Yeah. And
as a little kid, seeing that, I don't know if it was a repeat or first run or what it was, but the image of people turning to dust. You know, the clothing laying there and the dust coming out of the sleeves and the face gave me nightmares. It absolutely gave me nightmares for a long time. Just something about the notion of that. Or that's how people were dying. It really freaked me out. And that was a TV movie. So there you go. There's one right there that was really pretty disturbing when it hit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the TV movies by that point had gotten pretty good, and they had this, in the early 70s, you know, the post-Vietnam horror boom, and I'm going to say the grittiness of a lot of them really had some, it gave them some gravitas, it gave them a bit of a patina to where they were kind of scary looking, and I think the milestone of 1970s TV movies, by the way, I looked up a list of the top 50. I sent it to you. The Night Stalker is not on that list.
Oh, and really?
That confuses me as a human being. What a wonderful film that is. And to not have that be included in one of the top, you know, 10 TV movies of the 1970s, horror TV movies in the 1970s is bizarre.
Yeah, because there were three, right? The Night Strangler. Was there a third one?
The TV series was the third one.
After the two. Okay, gotcha.
The next TV movies that came out were actually just episodes repackaged. There are two more Kolchak TV movies.
I recently rewatched both of those. They came out on Blu-ray, and I actually thought The Night Strangler was even better. I don't know what it was about it, but I thought it flowed better, and it was better. It might have been. Isn't Joanne Fluge in that one?
I thought she was in the first one.
Well, maybe that's it. Well, you know what a Fluge.
She's Sue Storm in the old Fantastic Four cartoons.
That's right. That's right.
I always thought it was Joanne Fluge. I had no idea. You just said that was
I thought it was Fluge because I remember her on game shows and I remember them saying I remember Fluge for some reason, but maybe I'm wrong. But I thought the second one was even better. But that's a great that's a pretty hardcore TV movie.
You know, they're excellent. Yeah.
Stuff in there, you know.
When I was becoming a fanboy in the 80s, my father was like, "Oh, Kolchak. I love Kolchak." And, you know, my dad wasn't a geek. You know, he didn't watch a lot of sci-fi. But for that to hit his radar was pretty impressive, because he was more of a fan of like Along Came Bronson, you know, like my dad had a midlife crisis in his 30s and bought himself a motorcycle, the whole Megillah. And but he liked Kolchak. He'd watch Kolchak with me, which is funny. Cool.
Michael, Along Came Bronson, Michael,
Parks.
Because I remember when Twin Peaks was on, he shows up in the second season. Uh-huh. And Dad would say to me, like, you know, he was in a show, and he knew that show. Both our dads think, seen that show. That's funny.
Yeah, I think that was a dad's thing.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Dude,
yeah. Well, he was...
I bought a Michael Parks record at Value Village not long ago.
Who?
Talented musician. Not my kind of music. But I just couldn't leave it lying there.
And I love that he shows up in the Tarantino stuff that he shows up in. He's
amazing in it. Yeah, no, he's awesome. Yeah.
So the other one I would think of right off the top of my head is Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
I'm glad you brought that up. What do you think of that? Did you see it as a kid?
I did, but also I barely remembered it. And then I saw the remake, the feature that Del Toro executive produced, because he'd always said that TV movie is one of the scariest things ever. And then I bought it recently. There was like a Warner Brothers site sale where they were like, buy one, get one half off or whatever. Or they were all half off or something. Maybe they were all half off. So I figured now's a good time. And I rewatched it, and it's good. It's strange. It's definitely strange. The whole relationship between the husband and wife thing is really weird. But I didn't find it that, not in a Kolchak way, or not in a way that sort of still has a punch. I don't know what quite Del Toro is talking about. And it's not very, definitive
in no.
either.
Yeah. I had heard about it for years. I'd never caught it on television, and it started to grow that kind of like legend to it where people would talk it up, you know, like, oh my God, it's the greatest thing ever, you know? And right. I didn't see it till I was about 40, which, and you know, I talked it up. Like, you know, I said to my wife and I, of course, love horror movies. And I said, oh yeah, this is supposed to be really scary. It's slow and slightly creepy. And, Kim Darby's character is kind of annoying in the film. She's like a child.
Yeah. Well, that's what's the most throwing to me is like, the relationship between her and the husband, because the husband seems 30 years older than her.
Yeah, and Darby, by the way, I always think of her as Blaine's mom from Better Off Dead, and I always think she had like this career in comedy she never really took, because she's absolutely wonderful in that film. Like, she's just so oblivious and strange, and it just seems so natural. I don't know if you've watched that in a long time.
Been a while. I wouldn't have even known that she was in it, but yeah.
She's completely out to lunch, and it suits her. Like, she just is so sincere, and her husband is David Ogden Stiers from MASH, and they just make a really good pair, and she has amazing comic timing and chops, and she's very funny in the film, and I didn't realize she was Miri from that classic, you know, Star Trek episode.
Yeah,
but she's, and it's weirdly enough, she's in another TV movie I was just watching the other day called The People. I think it was a pilot about aliens living on Earth. Ooh. And it's her and William Shatner again. Like, this is broke William Shatner, you know, before he, you know, Star Trek royalties kicked in.
Going around and, Winnebago doing.
Yeah, theater. This is Winnebago dinner Winnebago. Theater. William Shatner and. He does a wonderful job on Kung Fu. The movie didn't really work for me. I could get it in the point that if I was six, this would haunt me for the rest of my life.
Right.
But at 40, I was like, those creatures are neat. This needs to pick up the pace.
I know we're always very careful on the show not to. Not to give too much away if people want to see these things, but I remember it sort of being, when it did sort of wrap up, being unsatisfying. Like, kind of like, what just happened? Like, the credits hit, and I was like, oh, Is that it? That's all we're doing?
It's your typical downer 70s movie yeah. ending. My daughter thinks it's hilarious. She's like, you grew up where everybody was just dead at the end. You know?
You know what? There was gas prices were off the charts, and we had Watergate and Vietnam.
Yeah. No, I get it now. And I, you know, I always say to her, this was my normal. You know, this was the scary part of growing up in the 1970s. Yeah, you know?
Part of it was that was a backlash to almost like a counter. It sort of went with the counterculture. The darkness in Hollywood certainly came from people at studios and executives that were doing things that were far more in touch. And as most decades, you know, when they like, you know, in 1971, everybody wasn't dressed like they were in 76. And in 1980, there were still flares. You know, people were in flared trousers and stuff. So it was like this slow kind of darkness that crept in from the optimism kind of that there was a lot of the time, and kind of the phony, you know, the way, you know, the pillow talk and things like that. And it started to bleed into the TV movie stuff. Of course, Duel would be another one, which I wouldn't call it horror, but like a thriller.
Thriller. Yeah, but I think we're going there. So yeah, I would absolutely put that there. Duel is a classic Steven Spielberg film. And boy, I think it's been copied a lot, to be honest with you.
Well, it's kind of a way, and I think he even said this, it's kind of the precursor to Jaws in a way, that there's this,
yeah,
you know, in certain flashes of it. I think did it get released theatrically in Europe or something? Am I wrong?
It's very possible. I'm not 100%, but it's one of those films that, like, I remember Siskel and Ebert talking about, saying, you know, it's a TV movie, but it's better than most of what's in theaters.
Yeah. That's a great one. But horror was, there was a lot of dark stuff in horror and sci-fi TV movies.
A lot of stuff like devil possession stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that was really big in the early 70s. And I think it's cheap to do, you know, stuff like The Devil's Daughter with Shelley Winters. And
was there one that was a TV thing, was called like The Possessed or Possessed, or and Harrison Ford is in it. He's like a high school teacher that's flirting with a student or something, and she turns out that she's getting possessed or something.
You're right. That's a 1977, and it stars, oh God, TV Roy Scheider, James Ferrantino, and Harrison Ford.
Yeah, he's like, it's kind of creepy because somebody put the clips up on YouTube, like all his scenes together, and it's like, are you saying he's having an affair with this? The teacher's kind of sort of having a student or something, and she's got, you know, witchy powers or devil powers or something, and he, you know, but that was a TV movie, and that was all in that vein of, you know, the possession stuff, or the Damien and the Exorcist Damien stuff was very big, and you know, it would make
there's
sense.
One with Roy Thines. I think he runs a school, and he's Satan's school for girls or something like that. I just remember it's like kind of a low point for Roy Thines. There was a lot of satanic panic back then. And that stuff scared the crap out of me as a kid, because you know, growing up Catholic that was the one thing that just kind of like felt like it was sort of real when I was six.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, absolutely it would. Because, yeah, that age, you'd think this is all, you know, possible. You know,
yeah.
that kind of darkness. What about, didn't we just talk about gargoyles or something? Didn't that just come up?
It came up, but to the listeners, it hasn't come up because we're filming or we're taping episodes out of order.
Spoilers.
But I will say that I'm right. This will all make more sense in November to people, but I was right. It is Bernie Casey who played the lead gargoyle.
Okay. And that was something that was a TV movie, right? And
yes.
Did the effects, wasn't that like his first gig or something?
It's an early Stan Winston gig for sure. I saw that as a kid. And it completely haunted me. I'm sure I saw a rerun of it at Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really a great film, but for a TV movie, I mean, it's amazing. But have you watched it recently? Like, it's pretty easily available.
I haven't seen it probably, oh God, 20 years maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, when it came out on VHS in the early 90s, I forget what the circumstances was. I wasn't actually working in this store, but the owner of a store asked me to like watch it for the morning, and it was like a video slash comic store. And at the time, we got along, and later on, it didn't work out so good. But I ran a store for like the morning, and I like put Gargoyles on this like rainy Saturday, and I remember going like, yeah, this was a lot faster when I was a kid. It's very slow. And I won't put it down, and I will plan to watch it. I cannot talk the wife into watching it, but other than the fantastic special effects in the film, it is a bit of a slow ride. It's got one of my it's an underrated actor, Cornel Wilde, who's from that brilliant movie. He's not in a lot of films, Wilde. He's in The Naked Prey, which is probably his most famous role, and then he kind of like. I don't know how to explain that guy. Like he ended up in, he's a bit like McGoohan, where he ends up in these weird projects. Like he'll end up on an episode of The Love Boat, but then he'll like finance his own movies, and he's in some weird films. He's in a movie called Shark's Treasure that is really hard to watch. I think it's like a post Jaws movie, and it's got Yaphet Kotto in it. And I've seen it a couple of times, and it appears to be like a morality play. It's a very strange movie, and he directed it, of course. And clearly, Cornel Wilde does not like drinking, and he was not real into gay people. And I would not super recommend that movie. But yeah, he's in Gargoyles. He's the lead in that film, and it is one of the most classic 70s TV movies that exists, in my opinion. That would be a top 10 for me, even though it's a little slow. But what are you gonna do? A lot of these things were
Well, isn't it
another.
funny? It's sorry, that's a good thing to that's a good thing to jump on is the pace of these things. I've talked about a couple of friends, like I've got my buddy Paul has been showing, oddly enough, the Bond films to his kids who are 6 and 9, I think, or 9 and a half or something. And it's hit or miss, but for the most part they dig them. And the older kid is like wants to know everything about the lead Bond girl, like what's her story, who's that, like, which is like a kid after my own heart. And then
We're all that kid in
he
some
showed
way.
the Moonraker the other night, and he said he texted me. He's like, oh my God, they caught the Close Encounters. When he does the code to get in a room, it's like beep 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 beep, and the kid's like, that's from Close Encounters. But some stuff he'll say, or I've got another friend recently that was asking about. Certain movies or kids things like that we grew up with, you think they'd be okay with this or that. And the pace is something that's interesting, considering the generations, since and how things have moved in movies and television and et cetera. You and I joke about like 70s detective shows or whatever TV shows. The credits take 3 minutes. The opening credit, Greatest American Hero, is like 15 minutes of credits. The opening credits.
You remind me of that Family Guy where he's trying to watch Maude, and the stanzas in the Maude song just keep going on and on and on. Da 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 da. And he's like rolling his eyes. Like, yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Greatest American Hero, it's the entire song almost, the opening credits, and then it's again at the end, and it's not just the credits, they freeze shots. So the end credits are like 3 minutes. So
Well, because it
everything.
was just so good.
Well, it was also like we're gonna sit through every second of it because there's nothing on. So I wonder about some of these things that because we're sort of, I was gonna say connoisseurs, but that's a snobby term. But I just mean we watch everything and we're good at putting it into context and stuff. But I wonder how, some of that stuff holds up because of the pace. Pace is definitely the biggest obstacle, I think, in trying to turn people on to some of this stuff because it all takes its time. It really takes
My
its time.
favorite thing I've ever done with my, like, I go to old movies with my daughter a lot. I've taken her to, you know, classics and you know, Russ Meyer movies. But I took both my kids to the Universal Monsters one night. Like, it was The Mummy and The Wolfman. And it was one of my favorite experiences with them because they both were not bored. They really enjoyed the films. And at the end of The Wolfman, which was the second feature, when the lights came on, my daughter was in tears.
Oh.
And I still, to this day, believe that quality, you know, the quality of those films perseveres the weirdness that is, you know, an old-time film and that sort of thing. So I don't really so much believe that. I think that just sometimes things are just slowly paced. But you know what I mean? Like,
That's actually a great example. That's a great, the Universal Monsters of. The thing is, those are like, some of those are like an hour and 12 minutes. I mean, some of them are like, you know, the length of a movie back then too. And it's like, there's the black and white, there's the effects, there's the music, there's the, you know, there's that bit of jarring, you know, a little jarring. But when you do watch them, they move at a good clip. You know, I think once you get to like, you know, some of the 70s stuff and the early 80s stuff. I told you, you know, Alex showed Time Bandits to his daughter, who's like 12, and she got halfway through it and said, "Who am I rooting for in this movie?" You know,
that is a smart kid.
And he's like, "I haven't seen it in years." He's like, "God, is it slow? It's so slow." You know, so I almost think that the universe, like the monster stuff and some of the 30s stuff, has that to its advantage because it really hits the ground running, and they're very sort of quick pieces. But you know, especially a lot of the TV we grew up with was opening credit city. You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 What do you think the longest opening credit is? It Different Strokes or?
That's pretty long.
Fantasy Island has one heck of a long credit sequence.
That's got a long opening, like before you even see the title, I think, doesn't it? Or before you get to the island, the whole plane comes in. I don't know. I go back to, I keep going back to Greatest American Hero because I tried getting into it on streaming a couple years ago, and I was just.
It's funny you say that because we had the exact same problem.
I was shocked how long the opening credits took, and then at the end, it's like, look at what's happening.
Yeah.
The instrumental thing, and it runs the entire episode through again with those freeze frame shots, you know, and it sits there for a minute, and then the credits are on it, and then the next scene goes on for 20 seconds and freeze frame credits over it, da 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 da. And it just seemed to be, if it was a 45 minute or 42 minute experience, that like 8 minutes of it were the opening and closing credits of the show.
We really love this song. We're gonna play it twice.
It's almost, I mean, I think he does two verses of the song.
Yeah.
It's almost the one that was on the radio. You know,
yeah.
That,
I had that 45, that Joey
Scarborough. Joey Fatone's Greatest American Hero. But I look at something like, okay, so the 70s, like Streets of San Francisco, Barnaby Jones, Rockford Files, you know, all of those credits move pretty quick. They're pretty, they're pretty in and out. When you start getting a little bit later, it's almost like they got indulgent towards the end of the 70s and the early 80s, and these things kind of, you know, kind of went on. Different Strokes, I think those are pretty long. That it's got to tell the whole story every week.
Yeah, the Facts of Life is also just a saga.
Yeah.
You know, it is. I know because my wife watches a lot of the Facts of Life.
The opening credits of the saga.
Kids are actually older by the end of the episode than they were at the beginning.
That's the best description. That's exactly what the opening credits were. What else can you, what else do you think of when you think of, like, is there monster stuff, you know, 70s, early
80s? Well, there's not a lot of monster stuff. There's a werewolf movie with David Janssen, and of course there's some great vampire movies. In fact, one of my favorite TV movies of the 70s is they took all the episodes of Cliffhangers, the Dracula parts, and made a Dracula TV movie kind of hard to find. I think when you're really talking 70s TV movies, especially in my area, it's like this one played one rainy Sunday afternoon where all our parents were out. Every kid I went to high school with talked about this, every latchkey kid for sure, which was Trilogy of Terror.
Oh, I forgot that was a TV movie.
Yeah, Dan Curtis, who also produced Dark Shadows and produced, of course, The Night Stalker as well. Then he became the king of the miniseries in the 80s. You know, he did like The Winds of War and that sort of thing. Written by William F. Nolan, who, of course, wrote Logan's Run, and Richard Matheson, who I think just doesn't get his due as the father of modern horror, the writer of I Am Legend, among other things.
Totally.
Inspirations for Stephen King.
Incredible Shrinkers fan, too. Isn't that Matheson?
Oh, yeah. Matheson is... Matheson can't get enough, in my opinion, an influence and a talent. So it is three vignettes, and they are, you know, they all star Karen Black, and it's sort of her turn. It came out in 75, and of course, there's two segments that few of us can remember, and the one with the doll. Like, it really is, like, you know. And if you remember that big clamshell VHS of it back in the 80s, it was doll front cover. Not as scary. Like, I think I rented it in 92 or 93. I remember renting it from Suspect Video and going like, oh, yeah, like this is a TV movie. It's good, but it's a TV movie. You know, it's an early 70s TV movie.
But I'd also like to say, by way of explaining the 70s to those that are confused about it, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, I am not being cruel, I promise. There is none more 70s WTF, how did this kind of happen, than Karen Black. Yeah. Karen Black was in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you Five know? Easy Pieces, Five Easy. Airport, 75.
Yeah. Day of the Locust. I mean, she was, and I think we're, you know, I'm not speaking out of school by saying she had an interesting look and an interesting eye line, sort of, that I remember as a kid just thinking, well, this is just some character lady they got for this thing. I never really grasped how she got so big. But it's very 70s. It's like the kind of era that, you know, another one, because it's funny, you're talking about, you said vampire stuff. There's a TV movie that Catherine Harold and Richard Lynch did. And
oh, yeah, that's on YouTube. He's a vampire. They dig him out of a construction site.
Yes, I think it's just called
I think it's called Vampire, yeah. And well, anything with Richard Lynch is worth watching.
In a roundabout way, I won't go into too many details, but let's just say I was having a conversation with Catherine Harold once, and it's a long story, but I see her on a weekly basis. So that was, yes, exactly. And so every now and then things would come up, and we were talking, well, I don't remember what the subject was, but she said, yeah, I actually made a movie a long time ago with a man. Oh, I can't think of his name, but the man, he sort of, well, it was a TV movie. It was like, I think it was a vampire. And he was this actor that he sort of had scarring on his face. And I said, Richard Lynch?
Yeah.
And she looked at me like, yeah, how do you know that? And I'm like, yeah, he had a really bad acid trip. And he like poured gasoline on himself or something and lit himself on fire or something. And that's why the scarring, whatever. But whenever I think of that now, I just think of that trying to find the name of this guy. Me just going, Richard Lynch. I know that Richard Lynch was in a TV movie with Catherine Harold in the 70s, and I actually came across it like on YouTube, like you did a couple years ago. And it's very 70s, and it's, but again, there's a guy
pretty good though.
There's a guy that you're like, that guy was a face in. He went from sort of henchmen or bad guys in episodic TV to something like that, you know, the Sword and the Sorcerer. I think he was in Sword and the Sorcerer.
And he was on Buck Rogers. He was Morgan Veloci.
And a bunch
Vegas
of
Vegas in Space. That's like one of my favorite Buck Rogers.
And a bunch of like low budget, you know, horror type stuff. But a really interesting looking dude that kind of had to have come out of the 70s stuff.
Absolutely. There's no other era for him. Yeah, I forgot about Vampire. I'm glad you brought that up, because that would have, I would have felt bad after not remembering that. Do you remember this one? This one's a little weird, and I saw it, like, when I would come home from school, they would play TV movies from like 3 to 4 or 3 to 5, and then they play like Battle of the Planets. So I'd always end up watching like the last half of a TV movie. And sometimes it was cool stuff like, you know, Planet Earth or, you know, some John Saxon thing. But this was one that I saw a couple of times called Isn't It Shocking? And
that doesn't ring a bell.
Brasser, and it's a mystery. It's more of a thriller, a comedy, where somebody's killing all the old people by electrocuting them in this town. It's a weird movie, and it's totally forgotten now. But it's one of those things that, you know, could only have happened in the early 70s.
Isn't it shocking?
Isn't it shocking? Yes. One I remember really well. And another one I remember really well, and I feel I've brought up on this program before, is a film called A Cold Night's Death. And it's another thriller about two guys at a polar research station that shit keeps happening to them. And they basically is sort of like The Thing, in that it's this, you know, two guys trapped in a polar research station, and they keep getting screwed with. And I won't give away the ending, but it's Robert Culp and Eli Wallach, and it's worth hanging in there. It takes a long time to get to where it's going, but the ending is a huge O. Henry twist, and I truly enjoy that film.
Maybe it was only a special, but wasn't there a reboot of the Munsters or Addams Family in the 70s that was like a...
Addams Family, Halloween with the Addams Family, and it's filmed on video.
Just an episode, or was it a TV movie?
It was a TV movie, and I think it was supposed to be like a backdoor pilot, maybe to reboot the show, but the magic was gone in a way. I've watched that as a teenager. I've never watched it again. There's a Munsters movie, but I think that's an 80s TV movie, where the Return of the Munsters. And I have watched that again, and it is what it is.
You remember wasn't there one?
It's that, better like, than that Addams Family one.
Wasn't there one that was like Ed Herman as Edward Herman as Herman, Veronica... somebody as Lily, and then Robert Morse was Grandpa. There was one of those. I don't know if that was 80s or 90s.
But there has been several reboots of the Munsters. There was the Munsters Today in the 80s, and then in the 90s, I'm pretty sure the 80s, I think John Shook was Herman, and then Edward Herman was Herman in the 90s.
That was pretty good casting. Edward Herman and Robert Morse doing those characters, and Veronica Hamill, I think is her name. She was on Hill Street Blues, brunette woman. She was Lily, and it was pretty dead on, but I don't remember when that was. But okay, so there was a Munsters TV movie in the 70s. It wasn't just a half hour thing.
No, there was the Munsters TV movie came out in the 80s. I'd say 1980 or 81. That was I'll just look that up, because the Munsters Revenge, I think, is what that's called. And it's pretty, I bought it for my 81 it came out. I remember I was like 10. I bought it for my kids not long ago, and it's definitely not the it's definitely not the wit and the writing of the 60s show, which is more absurdism. It's pretty cartoony. Like, they've just, they don't have the same, what am I looking for here? The same kind of idea for it, in the fact that, you know, the Munsters were a normal family. They were just trying to be a normal people. And that was the whole joke. It was a fish out of water comedy. In that one, you know, monsters are far more, it's just a childish movie, to be honest with you, but it's fun. It's like a big Halloween special. Bob Hastings, who did Commissioner Gordon on the Batman animated series, is the Phantom of the Opera in that one, and it's pretty funny.
Love Bob Hastings.
Yeah, but it has a silly kind of cartoon plot to it. You know, it's just, you know, somebody's using robots of Herman. I think it's Sid Caesar is using robots of Herman to commit robberies. It's, you know, like already you've got this plot that isn't really
based on a true story.
Oh yeah, of course. That was totally based on Patty Hearst.
What else comes to mind when you think of that era of, you know, horror and?
Well, I was gonna say Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
Something that scared the living hell out of everyone in my grade school. I don't think we saw it originally. I think Buffalo 29 played it when I was in sixth grade, so that would have been about 81, and it freaked out the whole town. Like, and I think I missed part one of it because I, like, who knows what I was doing or watching Doctor Who or whatever. But the next day, every kid on the schoolyard is like, I slept with a cross last night.
I remember it was either, I don't recall if I saw it before I saw it in a magazine or the other way around. I think I probably saw it first, and then I saw it, images of the vampire in.
Oh yeah, Reginalder. It is really freaking.
But it was, but I saw it when it was on. It was like, my brain only knew one type of Dracula, which was, you know, the Bela Lugosi, whatever. I kind of had seen a Christopher Lee one, maybe, but Dracula was sort of bleh, you know, that whole thing and the Count Muppet. And so this thing was like, it scared me to my socks. Like how the like that design, I mean, that look is, you know, 30 some years old and still packs a punch, you know, how he looks in that. The cast is phenomenal. It's Tobe Hooper, right? Tobe Hooper directed it, I think.
Oh, golly.
I
think you're right. I think you're right. It's based on Stephen King, of course.
Yeah.
Now I can't find the
David
listing.
David Soul. And Reggie Nadler, whatever, as the vampire. But it was, if I didn't see it first run, then it would have been, like you say, right after 80, 81. But I think it might have been first run, because I remember watching it with my dad, and that they would drive around in that Jeep, and the doors would never close on the Jeep. And it would bug me as a kid. I go, the door's not closed. The door's not closed. My dad's like, you shut up. I'm trying to watch a movie.
And, oh, God, you were that kid too, eh?
I couldn't help it. Like, door's not closed. I'm gonna write a letter. But the kid floating out, the kid floating outside. I enjoyed your film. I couldn't help you distracted by the Jeep doors not closing.
Fix that in post. That would be terrific.
The dad, Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah.
Sitting in the chair.
70s TV movies.
That image is so evocative. And the kid floating outside the window.
Yeah, let me in. Yeah.
It's still scary. It still packs a punch. That's scary shit to put on TV in 1979, you know.
Well, when you're 8 or 9, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, did you know there's a sequel to Trilogy of Terror and Dan Curtis directed it in 96?
Is it Quadrilogy of Terror?
It's just called Trilogy of Terror 2. There's no Karen Black in it. I believe she was still alive back then. It has Jeffrey Lewis in it, though, weirdly enough.
Oh,
and it does have more of the African doll, so the Zuni fetish doll, which I want to say is so impactful because there was actually like toys of it. And how many 70s TV movies got toys, you know, like that's 30 years later.
But it does. That's a great example of something. And you kind of described it as such that it's legend, or the image looms larger than the actual product.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
Everyone knows the doll, and they know that bit of it, and it became this, oh, my God, you know what gave me nightmares was the little Zuni doll or whatever. But it doesn't – it's not – I mean, it's worth seeing for sure, but it's not, like, anything special, you know, I don't think. I mean, not like some of the other titles we're talking about. You know, it's definitely worth seeing because it's weird. And, you know, the portmanteau was so popular in the, you know, late
60s. And God love them. I absolutely am a huge portmanteau fan.
Did you ever get, by the way, did you ever get to Ghost Stories, the movie I recommended last year?
No, I haven't. And I should have done
that. Oh, my God. You got it. That is
gonna tell the wife.
That is up on Prime.
Oh, great. Okay, I'll tell the wife because she's been looking for stuff.
And it's spooky. It's spooky scary as opposed to it's not like a gore fest or something. But it's so good. It's so good. I can't recommend it enough.
Oh, I'll check that out. Have you ever heard of this title, Bad Ronald?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
this is an interesting film. It's one of those things I think that the concept was more terrifying than the actual film, where a creepy kid, like these people buy a house and there's just a creepy kid who lives in the walls. Oh. And he's a perv, of course. And it's played by Scott Jacoby, who he did a lot of work in the 70s. And he's actually related to other, you know, actors like Billy Jacoby, of course, is like a half brother. Scott Jacoby's big thing in the 80s was he was Dorothy's son on the Golden Girls, Michael Zabornak. And he played Bad Ronald. And I honestly think Bad Ronald is another one of those films that, like, the idea is better than the execution. Mm-hmm. That's a terrifying idea, you know, just like, yeah. You know, this creep lives in this house that you stole.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And people joke about that all the time. I know, like, people of a certain age, meaning Gen X kids, I've talked to friends who are saying, yeah, I just bought a new house, but I had to make sure Bad Ronald wasn't living in it. Right. And, you know, it's a really great gag. But, yeah, that's one of the more memorable TV thrillers of the 1970s, I would say.
Hmm. I don't think I've seen it. I know the title, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely...
I've watched it once. I can't quite remember it, but I liked it better than Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Okay, so you say Salem's Lot, and that was like a mini series. Wasn't it two nights?
It was a two part. Yeah, it was a series. I know it's like a TV movie, but it's.
Would you put V in the category of kind of scary or spooky or?
Well, it wouldn't be 70s.
No, but neither is what's the other one we mentioned that was like early 80s, whatever. Like it's not, but it's to me it kind of goes along the same palette, sort of. It's. You know, creepy and kind of disturbing for a TV or a miniseries, as opposed to, you know, just a vampire story or something. There's some really gross and disturbing stuff in it, I guess.
Yeah, I probably like V is definitely a memorable television production, one of the most of all time, I think. I mean, it's really great, but it's a miniseries, and I think it became, a TV series after. So I don't know if I'd put it in the same, like, as, you know, Bad Ronald or The Devil's Daughter or those. Mm-hmm. Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which are just done as one and done, you know, mm-hmm. meant to scare you, meant to get a bunch of ratings, and then gone. Have you ever watched Look What Happened to Rosemary's Baby?
No. Now, that's – I know of that. But no, I don't know. I've never.
Have never sat through that.
Who's in it?
Well, it isn't Mia Farrow, that's for sure. I think it's I'm just looking at it, and there it is. Patty Duke, Broderick Crawford. So, you know, I get a little sex appeal.
Yeah, they're probably married in it.
10-4. No, I believe Patty Duke is Rosemary, and Stephen McHattie, I think, is her husband. I have never.
Canadian actor Stephen McHattie?
Is he Canadian?
The dude that was in Pontypool.
Yes. Nova Scotia, Antigonish.
I love that dude. I freaking love that guy. He's one of your best exports. He is so good. He's got such an interesting face and a wonderful voice.
He's in Watchmen.
Yes, he's the original Night Owl in Watchmen. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He is. he has a wonderful
he was in, vibe. Did you ever see the Cronenberg film, the age of, no, what's it called? The Age of Violence or the Something of Violence?
History of Violence? Yeah, Sean did that.
My friend
Sean did
that. He's one of the two bad guys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, he's got an amazing presence. I like that guy a lot.
Great face.
I have never sat through Look What's Happened to Rosemary's Baby because, and I don't care if this gives me trouble, I can't stand Rosemary's Baby. I don't get it. I've never been a fan. Are you a fan of that stuff?
I wouldn't say I'm a fan. I can appreciate it for what it was, and I can sort of watch it and go into the mindset of what that experience was like for people. I remember a great story. I think it was in a documentary about cinematographers losing the light or something like that, back 20 years ago, whatever. Setting up, there's a shot where I think it's like you're in the hallway, and the whole frame is taken up with a wall is to the left, and about the midway point, you can see Rosemary like sitting on the edge of a bed or something, and she's talking to Ruth Gordon or something like that. I'm gonna get the shot wrong, but when they set it up, the DP was like, well, isn't the camera going to sort of, pan right so we can see who's talking to her, what they're talking about or whatever. And Polanski, which I know is a dirty word sometimes to even say his name, but Polanski said, no, trust me. And then on the night that, the premiere, whatever it was, when this DP saw it, the audience started to kind of tilt their heads to the right because they wanted to try to look around the corner of the wall because they were creeped out. They were like, they didn't like not knowing what was going on outside of shot, whoever she was talking to. And they'd kind of crane their necks around to instinctively look around the corner kind of thing. And so stuff like that it's kind of known for. It's sort of creepiness. But I think I've only seen it twice. It's not something I repeat view or would even put on a top 100 to watch for Halloween kind of thing. No, I don't dislike it. I'm also not a Mia Farrow. Mia Farrow just is like nails on a chalkboard to me most of the time.
Hey, Frank Sinatra is scowling at you.
Right. But Ruth Gordon, I love me some Ruth Gordon and Cassavetes. I don't mind Cassavetes at all. But I don't dislike it. It's like, meh.
It's not for me. I don't like devil stuff. I need a monster in there to make it interesting for me. That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely growing up in the early 70s with a lot of this crap, I have watched my fair share of it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you're scared of the devil.
I'm still scared of the devil. Yeah. But the devil to me is Mark McKinney from Kids in the Hall. that slightly overweight, balding devil.
Aren't they doing something? Aren't the kids in the hall doing something? Are they coming back?
Yeah, they are.
They're going to be doing like an Amazon show or something, or
like sure.
Six episodes or something. I don't know.
I not to get off on a weird tangent, but
because we don't do that.
No, not at all. This is odd for us. I love the Kids in the Hall. Kids in the Hall made Toronto feel cool. It made being Canadian feel cool for me, like SCTV did.
Yeah.
And I remember like that late 80s, early 90s of that show was really awesome. I loved watching that on CBC. I just don't know if they bring it. Like, and I even liked Death Comes to Town, their little follow-up. I don't know if you caught that.
I caught it. I never finished.
Mainly because they filmed it like across the street from my wife's aunt's house, mm-hmm. which I thought was awesome. But I like, fingers crossed, I guess, is the only thing I can say
to
rebooted Kids in the Hall. I mean, they are 60 years old now, and that's fine, but
have you seen any, but if, I gotta say, you said McKinney, have you seen any of that show? And I think I saw the first season maybe and parts of the second season, because I actually thought as a network sitcom goes, this is very, very funny. There's that show that's on network here. I think it's on NBC
called Superstore.
Superstore. He is
awesome.
Freaking sublime in that.
Yeah, show. I we the adore Superstore, and great. I love Glenn is a wonderful character in that. You just want to do his voice the entire time.
Yeah, and he's just so, you just look, oh God, I'm so happy he got something like this because he's so good in it. So
I forget what my wife and I were watching, or we were in some sort of social situation, and a woman's name was Jerusha, which is the name of Mark McKinney's wife on Superstore. And I believe I had to exit the room. Because I couldn't take that person seriously because their name was George. I thought it was a made up name for Superstore.
You know, I remember when that thing hit, and I was like, that's Mark McKinney. Oh my God. Like, yeah. Does the audience watching this even know who he is? Which is fine, of course. But like, this thing just came out of nowhere, and he's so freaking good at it. He's so good.
No, he is such an untapped.
Yes.
Totally. Like, he bombed out of Saturday Night Live because they fired him for being lazy. And I kind of agree with that. He wasn't really that good on Saturday Night Live. And then he kind of like bummed around Canada and did the odd thing. And like, a lot of them really haven't found their way. And then I always thought, you know, Dave Foley would be the big star. And for a while there, he was.
He was. Yeah. News Radio.
Yeah.
Big show.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice to see McKinney come out on top.
He did Bug's Life. He was the voice of
Hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massive. So there you go. Where else do you get a show about 70s
TV movies that turns movies into us talking about Superstore? It works.
Yeah. Somehow it works. Anything else? All right.
I really need to get this episode in the can so I can get it out for midnight. I'm hoping to do that.
Listen,
I have to go.
We were going to record, just so everybody knows, we were going to record early this week. I knock on wood, you know, this amazing thing happened where I got a call about a show that I jumped onto to be a host producer on, and we've been shooting nonstop. So I just we didn't have time to.
To my point too, I bought a new computer and I was out for 2 days. So like doing that whole switch thing of it's like moving a house, you know, except instead of having friends over, you're moving fonts. So I wasn't available as well. So
there you go. So he wasn't available. I wasn't available. And so we wanted to try to get something up because we always do two in the month of October. And we thought we'd put something up rather than nothing. So I hope
you. And good news, everybody. We have a November episode already in the can.
That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
The Mark McKinney episode.
The Mark McKinney episode where I just sit there and do Glenn from Superstore for an hour.
So we've got some fun stuff coming up. And
And
happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
We hope you're safe and sound and sane. For the most part, not too sane. And as always, when this goes up, we love all the comments and love all the other suggestions. I bet this thing conjures up a ton of memories from people about TV.
Yeah, movies. I want to hear your feedback. I can't get over the response to the Creature episode. That was our most popular episode on YouTube ever, by the way, Jason.
No kidding.
Yeah, no, it just blew up, and that's wonderful.
Well, he's the best monster, so there you go.
I got some guy on YouTube who gives me two thumbs down no matter what I do, and he kind of amuses me, but because it's like even before the episode launches, two thumbs down, you know? And
you have a long list of enemies. People don't know this, but...
Yeah, I've got the Rogues Gallery. Like, the Flash is like shit, man.
Yeah, got a lot of enemies. Boy, oh boy, you've just cut a path.
You know, I'm just painfully honest, and I'm a bit of a dick. So
yeah.
That's what.
Yeah. So this guy, whatever you did 25 years ago to this guy at some toy show, like,
I hate this. It's bing, bing. Grade 9, Hyler.
My Micronaut broke 20 years ago. Yeah. Hate your show.
So, 20 years ago, dude, I was 30.
Well, still, You know, I don't know. Maybe you pulled him a Micronaut at some show. I don't know who this guy is. He's holding a grudge. He's tattooed you onto his calf.
It's the guy from Bounty. It's Mike, the guy from Bounty Hunter Toys. I've rubbed him the wrong way, and he never says anything to me. He just downvote.
His Kresge card got dented or something. And
That sounds believable, actually. But yeah, I'm a clumsy ox, and I believe that could happen. One of these days, we should just talk about toy show stories, because I've knocked over some really expensive toys in my life.
It comes
from being a lummox. But happy Halloween, everybody. I'm going to go and hand out candy in the safest way possible on my front steps. I hope you're doing the same. I really want to make Halloween nice for these kids, despite everything going on. So I built a little creature on my front lawn that has a bowl of treats.
Oh, I love it. I'm on my way. I'll be right over with my pillowcase.
Cool. We're watching Halloween around 9.
Excellent. See you soon.
All right, man. Okay. Happy Halloween. Take care. Happy Halloween, everybody. All right.